abi awate abi black power man. Me abi awate abi black power man. Me abi awate abi black power man. Me abi awate abi black power man. I am a real African, a real African. I am a real African, a real African. I am a real.
It's usually pretty long, but like we'll have a shorter one. That's okay. Fine. I'm fine with that. That's cool.
See how it goes.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, people were like, yeah, from England, do you have tea with the Queen? It's like, do you not understand? Like, you know, people must think that. Do people actually? Did you think that before you came here and stuff? Because it's like we have. I live in a bad neighborhood. Like, people don't. And you have hoods. You have projects in the UK.
Yeah.
There are poor people everywhere.
Yeah, well, here's what I think it is that in America anyway, you know, like usual, the media will only show you certain parts. They only show you certain realities.
Yeah.
And they don't want you to know that there are bad neighborhoods, you know, in the UK, in Britain. Because first of all, Britain is an ally, a partner in American imperialism, in American wars. Mm. So, you know, I think we think of Britain as like, oh no, they're our sister, you know, our brother, and they don't want to show that capitalism in general has such an ugly, ugly side to it, a brutal side, that in America, they don't even really fucking talk about. Everybody pretends. Everybody who's got a little money, or, of course, they're super rich, they just pretend it doesn't exist, or they know it exists, but they won't show it on their... So you're talking about Americans who are like, ooh, high tea. That must be, you know, the Brits, that's all they do. They have tea with the Queen, because
they're surprised that I've got an English accent. Yeah, black people in London.
Yeah, I know.
Not in London. London's like, you know, like the Queen and Prince Charles.
I gotta tell you, here's another thing about that, and I'm guilty of this a little too. I have just recently in my life started to travel internationally. Mm. America is kind of isolated. I don't know what the statistics are, but I think a large proportion of Americans don't have a passport.
Like 80% or something.
Oh, you've heard this, right?
Yeah,
they don't even have a fucking passport.
When did you first get yours?
About 10 years ago.
Is that when you first started traveling?
I started traveling a little bit about, you know, 10 years ago because of comedy, thank God. Because of comedy, now it's taken me around a little bit, you know. But I've never been to Africa, you know. I would like to...
I've only been to Egypt once, and I'm from
Africa. Is that right?
I've never been to my own country.
Wow.
If they go there and they see my surname, they see my first name as well, because the president knows my first name. He knows that my dad had a son called Awate, which is like a famous name in Eritrea. It's not many people are named that, but it's the name of a famous person.
Yeah, wow. Would it be dangerous for you?
Yeah, no kidding. They'll take me.
They would just...
Oh, we've got like my dad's name. So we've got his son.
Wow.
So yeah. But what you're saying about capitalism, it's the most... It's so adaptable, capitalism. It's so adaptable. It will live anywhere. Because
all
you need is one greedy person, and capitalism is there for like hundreds of years. And
unbelievable.
Like,
and they say, you know, these...
Hi there.
I was thinking, can we get the veggie board? I'm a vegetarian.
Sure.
Yeah, is it good?
It's not bad.
Yeah.
It's basically for 2 to 3 people.
It's for what?
Two to three people.
Oh.
To share.
So maybe I should get the vegetable and coriander samosas.
Yeah.
Can I get that? That's vegetarian, right?
It is, sir.
Okay, you want something to drink? I'll buy you.
I'll just get some tap water, please.
Tap water.
Really like just sparkling?
You have a big bottle, so it's like a glass of soda or a big bottle.
Yeah, glass of soda.
Glass of soda.
With a lemon and lime.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, have you heard of Slavoj Žižek?
Slavoj Žižek?
Yeah.
Who's that?
I've just got into this guy. He's like a Marxist.
Ooh.
like philosopher and psychoanalyst from Slovenia who now works here.
Wow.
But tours around the world doing
he
lectures.
Tours?
Yeah. He's like a rock star.
And you gotta send me
this guy's amazing.
His link.
Because, yeah, yeah.
And what does he talk about? If he's a psychoanalyst?
Right. So he first, like, I first got into him because he deconstructed The Wire, the TV show The Wire.
Oh,
so
shit. One hour, have you watched
40
The Wire?
Minutes. Yeah, yeah. Have you?
No. Everybody's telling me I gotta watch it.
How can
the
you?
The creator of The Wire is a very interesting guy.
David Simon?
Yeah, listening to him talk, and he talks about just how that the capitalist,
yeah,
you know.
But he's not a socialist. He calls himself an idealistic Keynesian, which is
what,
like,
does that mean?
All right, I studied politics, but I'll break down. But first, Slavoj, like, he done like a 1 hour 40 minute lecture on The Wire. But one of the things he said was, capitalism is so powerful and so adaptable and ruthless wherever it is, that people can think about, they can imagine the end of the world, like with like a meteor or like a super volcano, but no one can imagine the end of capitalism. No one's you can't.
Well, in America, they fucking give anything. I don't know if you know this, but if you say the word socialism,
yeah,
in America, yes, the fucking right wing,
even exist.
The fucking, in America, by the way, it used to be two parties. Like, it used to be Democrats and Republicans, but now they're the same party.
Same
they're like
here.
The corporate
same here.
Party.
That happens everywhere. That it just moves. They move so close together, but it's the one from the left moves a lot more close to the one on the right. And behind the scenes, they're both as corporate and disgusting as each other.
Right, right. And that must just tap into the fact that people, I mean, you know what's really fucked up? Is it seems that it's rare. The politicians now are so corrupt in America. They're so fucking corrupt.
Yeah.
And there's maybe a couple of people who actually are fighting for people's rights. And, you know, the moral, there's no morals.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's
another thing. It reminds me of, like, when I'm just thinking about it, like the fall of Rome. Like, what happened in Rome was that it just got so corrupt. It got so, there was no fucking morals.
Yeah.
You know, people were just, like, in it for themselves, you know? The narcissistic just in it for themselves.
Thank you. Water and soda.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, here, I don't know if you know what's going on right now, but the Tory party are back in, the Conservatives.
I hear it, yeah.
Is that
Gordon Brown?
No, Gordon Brown was part of the Labour Party, but he was part of New Labour.
Who's the Prime Minister now?
It's an ex-lobbyist.
Cameron.
An ex-lobbyist
Cameron?
Called David Cameron. And they are...
A lobbyist, they're the worst.
Yeah, I know, he's terrible. But I don't know if you know how evil the Tory Party are.
Are they like the American...
Disabled people, they're taking them off benefits. They're taking... I mean, I know in America that you have less of a welfare state and whatever, because the American dream makes it kind of necessary that everyone has to work for yourself. But here, we had a welfare state. We have the NHS that they've destroyed, the National Health
Service.
Have
they destroyed it?
On April the 1st, they left every single part. They brought a bill. They got... Okay, basically, we had Thatcherism from the late
90s. Yeah.
From late 70s.
Well, we
70s,
had
Reaganomics. Yeah, Reaganomics, right? But from the late 70s to like 1989, Thatcher was in charge or whatever. And then John Major, another Tory, like, followed her and had 4 years. And then a couple years. And then in 1997, Labour got in with Tony Blair and Gordon Brown as the Chancellor of the Exchequer. But they were not Labour of old with socialist
That's
morals.
Same here.
They were New Labour.
Yeah.
And they
Blair turned out to be a big disappointment. Huh? He went along with Bush.
Yeah, but they went along with Bush. But here they privatised stuff. They carried on Thatcher's privatisation.
Yeah.
Right? And what the Tory party have done, they had an election in 2010 and they didn't win, by the way. The Liberal Democrats, who were the ones fighting for young people's rights.
They won.
And they came third.
Right.
And because the Tories did not get enough seats, they had to ally with the Lib Dems. The Lib Dems turned their back on young people that voted for them, and they raised tuition fees by three times. So it's £9,000 a year.
The Lib Dems turned their back?
Yeah. So they campaigned...
That's kind of what Obama's done in the States.
Yeah, exactly. But they campaigned saying, right now it's £3,000 a year for university. We want it to be zero, and we're going to fight for that if we get in power. And then no one won the election, so they do a coalition with the Conservative Party, and they tripled them. And that's when the student protests happened, right? And then it was huge demonization of the
demonization
of young people.
Were there riots to that?
The year later was the riots, and that happened as a response to the police killing an unarmed black man.
Oh, okay.
And the first story.
That's right. Where was what neighborhood was that?
Tottenham.
It was in Tottenham?
Yeah. Wow. And the first story was he shot a police officer in a cab.
Right.
And then over 6 months later, a couple of days later, the story was, okay, yeah. He didn't shoot people. The bullet was that was in a police radio was an actual police bullet. So a police officer right. shot another police officer during the melee, right?
Oh, yeah,
during
yeah,
the shootout.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the story came, he didn't actually shoot anyone.
Mm-hmm.
He pointed a gun outside, right? And then the story after that became, okay, he didn't point a gun, but he had a gun. He was holding it while he was in the cab.
So the story changed the story, again.
Yeah,
again,
and then
again.
It was, he didn't hold it in the cab, but he had it in his seat. And then it was, right. he didn't have it in his seat. We knew he had it in his sock.
Right.
And the last story, he didn't have a gun. He
right.
didn't have a gun. But they started off right. with he shot a police officer, right. so he didn't even have a gun.
Right.
Right, and the pictures they put on the media of this guy was him like with a gun sign and whatever.
Yeah,
like,
man.
You know, and then,
yeah.
But in the actual real press, yeah. like that didn't really exist, but on the blogs, they had pictures of him with his children.
Yeah,
you know, and with his nephews and stuff. But on the front page of the Sun, it's look at this gangster was killed by shooting the
yeah.
police officer.
And then
whatever.
There were riots.
Yeah.
Now the
and,
thing
and that
about
was the
that,
to
the
their
thing about
nothing.
Yeah, the thing about that is that what happens is that people get ignored by the capitalist system. Not ignored, but they're like, they, you know, they,
well, they have to be.
They,
yeah,
shunt,
they have to be.
It's like fuck you. It's
yeah.
like the capitalist system is like. We don't care that you're
yeah.
poor. We don't give a shit that you're poor. You don't serve any purpose. So what happens when there's an incident like that with the police? It's a spark.
Yeah.
And it sparks all of the dissatisfaction.
Exactly.
It's not just about that one incident.
Yeah, no, it's
about
everything.
A cop.
Like, yeah.
It's
why were people stealing stuff from shops? They were like these, you know, these disgusting poor people.
How long did those riots
shops?
Go on?
It was like 3 days.
It was 3 days.
People
yeah.
asking why do, okay, I understand a black person got killed
mm-hmm,
and stuff,
mm-hmm.
but why do they have to loot? Well,
mm-hmm.
like, imagine asking a kid, hey, why did you break into the shop and get a TV when, you know, when there was a bit of lawlessness?
Yeah.
And it, because the media keeps telling me I have to buy the TV and I can't afford it.
Yeah.
It's a simple answer because of consumerism.
Consumerism,
I can't afford one.
Man. Yeah.
I can't afford a television.
That's right.
I can't
That's
afford
right.
these sneakers
right.
at 50, you know, £100.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for like 2 days, there were no police on the street. But that was another thing. During the riots, the police were gone.
They were?
Yeah. They let people do it. Did you not
That's
know that?
That's insane.
That was the police left.
Because
in
they didn't want to get hurt.
No. They wanted it to continue. There was a thing upstairs and it said, don't get involved. The one thing they did do, in Camden, there was riots right here on this road, right?
Yeah.
And right we're in, like, Hampstead, that's when the police started blocking it off because that's where the rich people live. Like, Johnny Depp has a house there and Gwen Stefani and whatever.
In Hampstead?
Yeah. So they let
us... Oh,
they
so
let,
the riots
they let,
started
they
getting
let,
closer?
Yeah, no, they let us, like... Not us, I wasn't actually here, I was in Edinburgh.
Oh, they let...
But they let the poor people, like, break their own community. But... But don't you dare go into the rich neighborhood where the rich people live, because we don't want you troubling
oh,
them.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. By the way, I have to say hello, everyone. This is welcome to the welcome to my podcast. I'm here with Eddie Peppertone, who is an amazing comedian, and I saw his show. I first saw you. I think someone mentioned you or something. I think it was.
Yeah. How do you hear about me?
All right. Dylan Moran was on Marc Maron's podcast.
Oh shit!
And he said
he's a good comic.
Yeah, I think he's. I think he's pretty good.
He's amazing.
And he said he talked about your bit when you heckled yourself.
Oh, that's right.
So I went and saw it, and then I was like, okay, I'm going on YouTube spree, and I started watching all of your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw you were coming here, so I came down and stuff. So I came down.
Oh, you first heard of me through Dylan?
Yeah, on Marc Maron's podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when I get into someone, I try to find everything they've done. It's an obsessive character trait. I think artists do it. So, you know, if I find out about a writer, I find out every book he's written, every radio appearance he's had. So I started listening to a podcast, and it was really weird because whenever you did podcasts, you've done like a character. But you were on like the Comedy Bang or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
You came in as one of the Teamsters.
Yeah.
What are Teamsters? Is it just laborers, basically?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
People who just move stuff and.
Yeah, they
stuff.
Were a big. They
Oh, they were a union.
They're a union.
Yeah.
They're a union, and they got a bad reputation because there was mob, you know,
mafia.
Mafia infiltration
yeah.
into them.
Yeah.
The famous story, I don't know if you heard about it, was Jimmy Hoffa.
He
disappeared.
Yeah.
He disappeared. They never found
him. He's like in the Las Vegas desert or something.
Yes.
Yeah, that was mad, man.
They said he was buried in a football stadium.
Oh, wow.
That's what they suspect
in
Jersey.
They're doing a movie about him, right? Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, and Joe Pesci, and Martin Scorsese, I think. It's been in production for like 8 years now, but they said we finally got a script now for it.
Wow!
It's about
Robert De Niro. He's done some shit movies lately, man.
He has.
Holy shit. Just these romantic, like, talk about, we're talking about capitalism shit.
Yeah.
Boy, you know, the artists, you know, they talk about, artists can be co-opted so easily.
Yeah.
Artists can be co-opted so easily when they start making money.
Yeah.
And big money.
Yeah.
And then they are capitalists, you know, yeah. And De Niro is a perfect example. He used to do some really interesting work, and now, you know, this last half of his career is just this shitty, like, you know, like he's the father of the bride.
Yeah, exactly. And it's Mom. Oh, Pacino. Pacino's the worst one, right?
Oh, my God. He'll do anything.
At first, he was like this really quiet, I know, Michael Corleone, you know. Yeah. He was so, like, you know, he was very quiet and kind of reserved and very shy behind the camera. And I really liked that, right? I mean, in front of the camera, it was beautiful. And then he won the Oscar for Scent of a Woman.
Yeah.
In which he did this over the top.
Yeah.
What are you doing over here, kid? And then he became that character from then on. You know,
well, another element of capitalism, and a big part of it in the United States, and I think here as well, is celebrity culture. The culture, instead of being interested and attentive to what is really going on, gets absorbed with celebrities.
And the person instead of their work, do you think?
Yeah, fame.
Yeah.
The whole fame thing is just complete, it's another distraction. Like, people get, you know, celebrity culture means, oh, this person is famous, you know, this person is hot, this person is famous. And meanwhile, the banks across the fucking world are just raping people, taking their money, taking away healthcare, taking away workers' rights. But all they give a shit is what Lindsay Lohan or these fucking nobodies or Robert De Niro or Al Pacino.
Kim Kardashian. She was Paris Hilton's
Robert
friend,
De Niro,
Al Pacino. Sex tape, and now she's more famous. She's an industry. Her and her family are now an industry.
That's a good way to put it. They're industries.
Yeah. She's the industry of herself. Like, she is she's a corporation on her.
Yeah.
And she's married to Kanye West, who was, you know, is another corporation as well.
But I think
so
I think what happens to people is that the celebrity culture makes everybody think they're a celebrity. Like, Facebook, they have a Facebook page.
Yeah.
They have, they have all this shit on the internet. And so instead of caring about the deep issues that affect everybody, people are self-absorbed. And I'm not saying I'm immune to that either.
Yeah.
I mean, being a comedian, going around, I love when people love me. I love when I get recognition.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to be careful. You have to be careful that you don't become so self-absorbed because of the fame thing and the celebrity. And it's a narcissistic culture. You know what I mean?
Would you live in LA, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Off the belly of the beast.
How often do you get recognized on the street? Like, let's say in 1 week.
No.
Do you get
here
recognized?
Here and there when I go shopping and stuff.
Yeah.
Here and there, but not much.
And how
I'm not
it,
a
how
big
does it
celebrity.
Make people ask you for pictures and stuff? Or if someone knows you, they've probably seen you before and
they just
after
want to say hi. They
yeah,
just
yeah.
want to say hi and they're like, hey, Beppo, you know, I loved your show. They're usually always really nice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Always,
yeah.
You know? But
yeah,
I don't get recognized a lot.
That's what I love about the point I am now. If someone knows who I am on the street, because I haven't been forced onto them in like Heat magazine or television,
that's
they must
true.
Like me. If they remember me, they probably come to a show or they've looked at me online.
Yeah.
They like me. It's brilliant. But I'm sitting there watching.
They're fans, not.
Or like passively okay with me.
Yeah.
You know? So if they do come up to me, they recognize me because they don't remember someone you hate that much to come up to them in the street.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that because last year at Edinburgh, I don't know if you heard this story, but Hugh Grant.
Oh, yeah.
It was a big little tabloid sensation. He tried to get into my show. He couldn't because he was with 9 women, which is hilarious in itself. And 3 of them didn't have ID.
Yeah.
And so, but I was told because my friend was bringing Hugh Grant to the show.
Did he sneak in?
No, he didn't try to sneak in.
Okay.
He just was like, I'd like to get in. And then the bouncers at the Tron wouldn't let Hugh Grant and his party in.
Yeah.
But anyway, I heard that on the streets of Scotland in Edinburgh, they were yelling shit because you're talking about fame. they're yelling shit at him. You cunt. Like, they're just, yeah, like, random shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, people don't even know the fucking guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would think a certain level of fame is horrible. Like, yeah. A certain level of fame must be like,
that's
oh my God.
To, yeah. Me and my friends, when we like chill out and whatever, I think a couple nights ago, we were watching videos of celebrities getting, like, going...
You
going,
were?
Like, going, no, we're watching videos of celebrities and paparazzi getting into it.
That's kind of
so
funny.
It's amazing. There's one video of Hugh Grant, right? And he was just in his own area walking to the deli to pick up, like, some ham or whatever the hell, right?
He lives here, right?
I think he lives in like around Notting Hill, which is quite funny.
Oh, right.
But, and then he walked past the photographer and he just goes, "Fuck off, dickhead, get a real job," and then carried on walking.
He did?
Yeah. And then when he came out of the shop, he grabbed him by the arm and was like,
"They grabbed him?"
Yeah, he grabbed the guy by the arm and was, "Stop fucking following me, you fucking get a job that doesn't need you to follow someone around and depend on someone else. Be a real man or something."
Wow.
But it was amazing. And I was just thinking, like, if everywhere I went there were 3 cameras and like, you know, 8 cameras and whatever waiting for me to come outside a restaurant or something, right? Either my first thing for the first few months of that kind of fame, I would be like, "All right, guys, come inside, I'll buy them food and stuff, get them teas when I could." Yeah. Oh, this is very idealistic of me, I wouldn't know what happened in the real. But then if they, and then I would say, "Okay, take the pictures now, but cause I'm gonna walk, can you leave me alone? Like, take them now, if that's all right."
Yeah.
And try and have like a deal with them. But if they were just aggressive assholes, I would grab
a lot of them are.
I would grab someone by the throat and be like, "Stop fucking following me. You're making me feel like
mad.
This is making me go crazy.
They sue you because..."
Yeah, no, let that happen. I don't care.
You can't touch them.
Yeah, no, I don't care if they sue me because it's like they're making... Yeah. He's in my space. Like,
yeah,
making me feel really nervous. Like,
I mean,
one of the reasons why I'm going to court is because the police started following me around and grabbed me up. But before that, they were making me feel really, really nervous. You know, they were in my own area. It's like, imagine having a tail like that.
You know, I can't believe that the paparazzi are allowed to hound people like that. You know, and why they are is because, again, that feeds that beast of the public wanting to know about these people. And why do they want to know about these people? These people are inconsequential. I mean, nothing against Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
Nothing against Hugh Grant, but he's just an average...
He plays a character. Him himself, he's not very interesting.
Who knows if he is or not.
But I mean, like, in terms of he's never... he did come out in the Levinson Inquiry, you know, with the scandal with the Times and the Sun or whatever, the Murdoch, the News Corp crap, right?
Yeah.
The hacking scandal. I think we saw then why the police won't get involved with paparazzi, because the paparazzi, and maybe not the individual photographers, but the papers pay the police. We all know that. We've known it for years that, you know, they pay them for stories. If a celebrity gets arrested, there's a police officer right on the line.
Yeah.
Say,
corruption between police.
Yeah. And you know, they get paid off by the papers. That's
money buys everybody, huh? Like, money.
I don't think everybody.
Well, not everybody, but most people.
Yeah,
money,
course.
You know,
it bought
here,
Nelson
here's
Mandela
money.
And he sold out his people forever.
Who?
Nelson Mandela.
He did not, did he?
He did.
The great Nelson Mandela is a sellout.
Okay. Why do you think he's so loved by white people around the world? Why is it?
Well,
why
he's
is there
a symbol.
Why is there a statue of him next to Trafalgar Square on Parliament? Next to Parliament, there's a statue of Nelson, of a black man.
Right, I saw that. Yeah. Well,
you don't get that. You don't get that without doing stuff they love. You know?
Yeah.
They would never put up a one of Shea
you know
or Chavez.
Oh yeah.
You know, put one up of Chavez. You want to put up a freedom fighter. But no, they put up Mandela because the moment he came out of jail, he sold his people out forever. You get one chance at a revolution.
I didn't know that.
If you fail, it's done forever, right? He sold off everything. In the constitution of the ANC, they wrote, "The people, we should nationalize everything, every mine, every resource, everything."
Yeah, and he
the moment
was
he came
like...
out, they said, "Oh, you're out. Okay, you've got to sign this crap. We'll kill you. Die." What, in that position, you go on television, you explain what they've just told you to do, and then you take the shot in the head.
Yeah.
I would do that for my people. Like, I'm saying that right now. I'm like 21 years old. Like, I'm a kid, whatever, right? But I truly believe there's no compromise, right?
No
compromise at all. Take the shot.
Yeah.
Like, let them shoot you in that position. Because forever. You get one chance. And then, this day, they pay compensation to ex-apartheid ministers. Compensation.
Is that right?
Oh, sorry we had to kick you out of our country for oppressing our people under an apartheid status for 100 years.
They pay compensation.
They pay their pension, man.
Ha! Unbelievable.
So yeah, that's why I don't mess around with him. I see him as a traitor. If I ever see him, I'll kick him in the head.
Yeah, he's portrayed as the hero who spent how many years in prison?
Yeah, he did. But he should have stayed in there after. Like,
yeah, no, I hear you. We want people like Mandela to fucking represent us.
Obama,
you know?
Yeah.
Obama's a big disappointment.
The amount of black people that are telling me about Obama's amazing. And I'm like, do you know how many brown people he has droned?
No, yeah, that's right.
Not just that, but also in America, he's writing off stuff to take away human rights and indefinite arrest and all that kind of stuff.
He turned out to be just another corporate guy.
Do you think he turned out, or do you think he was always like that? The marketing was really good, right? I fell for it. I think I got caught up in it as well. For probably about the 2 weeks before the election, I was like, yeah, black man. And before that, I was like, yeah, no, I hate this guy.
Yeah.
Right? And I was like, I'm not going to let myself get caught up. But I know he's a corporate, disgusting, imperialist pig.
Yeah.
But for 2 weeks, I did get caught up in it. And then like, the... Five days after his inauguration, he signed off like the first drone strike in Pakistan that killed like 20 people, like a family. And I was like, oh yeah, okay. The spell has gone off me.
And they always justify it. Like, well, we have to, you know, do the drone thing because all this crap, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Fucking bullshit.
So, one of the things I want to talk about, we basically covered, is you done an interview with The Guardian. And in one of the bits, you said... I see the disparity of wealth around the world and the poverty, and in America is covered up by corporate jingles. And I thought that was one of the best things I've ever heard. That was a beautiful, and I quoted
it.
I forget great things I say often as well. I was like, did I really say that? Did I put it that eloquently?
Yeah.
But you said that, and it was
covered up by corporate jingles. Yeah, man.
It's just beautiful. Well, and that's a great statement. And it's one reason why I wanted to sit down with you and talk about that kind of stuff. I also want to talk to you in a minute about fun comedy type stuff. Would you say you're an anti-capitalist?
I'm what?
Anti-capitalist or against?
At this point, yeah. At this point, yeah. I mean, but you know, my friend like Mark Maron will point out to me that, well, you're using an iPhone. Yeah. I have an iPhone. You know, he
and
points
Colton
out to me that I'm using
iPhone.
All these fucking products. And I know I am, you know. So am I an anti-capitalist really if I'm, you know, using all this technology? I mean, look at how iPhones are made, right? We know how they're made. People were committing suicide in fucking Chinese factories.
No, not just that. In Congo, the Colton, 5 million people have died in 10 years. Genocide in Congo over the Colton. Like in this
What's
phone,
the Colton?
In my phone here, in your
I don't
iPhone,
even know that.
In like video cameras, in televisions, there's a mineral called Colton that no one knows about, but it is only found in Africa.
So they
in
need
Congo.
Them to make these things.
Yeah. And it's found in Congo, and it's found in a few other countries, right?
Yeah.
But they mainly get it from Congo now because they just pay militias off to kill another militia. 5 million people have died in like 10 years.
Over that resource.
Over that one mineral. It's like a metal,
so,
right? It's a precious metal.
So
that,
me
that
and
didn't
you are
mean
both
anything.
Using these phones.
Yeah,
does
yeah,
that
yeah.
mean we're supporting that system?
It does, but I don't. But I think...
You know,
I think
it's,
to an extent,
it's
though,
so hard you, because it's, yeah. everything is intertwined now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean... I feel like, well, I need the iPhone to fucking record stuff and fucking this and that to live. And I don't know what... So do you just fucking... You know, I don't want to live in a hot... Same here.
Because how am I going to get known? Like, if I'm trying to change the world through music or comedy or whatever I want to do it
right,
for,
right.
how am I
but are we
to
hypocrites
do
then? If we're...
Yeah. But I think But then I come up with the corny, human nature is hypocritical. You know? Why are we wearing clothes?
All
that kind of crap, right? Why do we shave?
Because
like,
I was talking about it. I was talking about this very issue on stage, and I said, folks, because this is in Hollywood, I'm talking to the crowd. I go, folks, you know, I think my politics are just leading me to a very small fishing village, so, and I don't know if I want that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, I think you can be a very progressive person, you know, pointing out, you know, this stuff, you know.
But I never want to live beyond my means, ever, at all.
Right.
Like, I want to make $6 billion a day through, like, art and media and, like, owning, like, businesses that employ people and stuff.
Yeah.
But I want to make that I want to be my income, but my expenditure, my personal expenditure, I want to live in a one-bedroom thing. I don't want to drive it. I will use public transport. Right. You know, I don't... Right.
You don't want to be a crazy wealthy...
I'm not even crazy. I want to live really modestly, right?
Yeah.
I want to make $6 billion a day, but I don't want to all be like...
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, when I was like 10, I asked my mum for a PlayStation. Right, I made the stupid mistake, and she said, listen, how much is PlayStation? I said, it's on offer, it's £100, right? And this was like 6 years after it came out. So it, when it first came out, it was like £200, £300.
Yeah, yeah,
and this
was
like, it's on offer now. It's finally £100. She said, £100 feeds like 8 villages in
Did
our country
that?
For a year. And from that day on, I just decided, I'm against money. I'm against spending. I'm against, I don't understand jewelry, right? In terms of, that's how much is that? £6?
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Yeah. That's fine. Right. But you know, rappers who wear like
that's ridiculous.
$100,000 chains.
No,
and
those
guys
can suck me. Those guys,
yeah.
Because if they do that,
so
can
many,
they be relevant
no,
about what they
no,
sing
of,
about?
Of course not. But unless
that's narcissism.
Unless it's what they talk about, because Jay-Z.
Yeah.
Like,
is he good? I've never fucking. You gotta turn me on to
rap. I don't like him.
He's huge.
He's disgusting. He's like the number one capitalist His album is a list of things that cost a lot of money.
Oh my God.
He just makes it rhyme, right?
Yeah.
But so someone like that, like firstly, there are so many arguments against diamonds and stuff. Number one, you're killing people. The diamond trade is a genocide.
The way
right?
they're mined.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't buy diamonds. We don't buy diamonds, me and my wife.
Okay. Yeah, but
we buy the
yeah.
fake shit.
Yeah, exactly. I might as well buy a plastic one. So that's the first reason, right? Is that. Secondly, it has no purpose. Like having a necklace, to me, it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like a can opener. Oh, it has a purpose. It does something. This cup is made out of glass and it holds. It's a receptacle for liquid, right? Or anything. It's a receptacle for anything that could fit in this, right?
Yeah.
And but a necklace doesn't actually do anything, right? Like a bracelet, it has no purpose.
Oh,
and
I
the
agree,
third
man.
Reason is because you could have spent that money to save lives, because there are people who live on this earth.
Hell yeah.
And they die because they don't have water. That's a mad sentence.
That's
to
unbelievable.
Say. That's a mad sentence. And I go out. I go to the cinema. I'm not.
You
I'm,
go
you
where?
Know, I go to the cinema. I pay £10 for a ticket. But I could spend to save someone's life, right?
Right.
But in back of my head, I think you know. I do charity shows. I do this. I do enough. And but you know, I still think like I'm against. Why buy a £100,000 Ferrari when you can buy a £12,000 car? That takes you somewhere. It has the same purpose.
Yeah.
So why?
Because
then that let me do some maths. That $88,000 that you could have that you spent more on the Ferrari you could give that to you could build a million wells.
Yeah,
you know?
Man.
But the same, yeah. But again, like I buy things that don't save people's lives to enjoy myself, and it's. And I'm not a hedonist. I hate hedonism, right? Because I think the number one thing in this world is suffering, and I want to suffer because I don't actually feel good when I feel good. Because there's always like a guilt there.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm like enjoying watching, doing anything, right? I'm still like, how can I enjoy this? When it's your thing, you know? How are the shirts so clean while people around the world, how am I enjoying this moment?
Yeah, yeah.
When
at
the same time, I know that my goal is to stop people suffering. Why am I enjoying it?
Yeah.
I feel guilty.
Yeah. You know what's interesting is that I've gotten into Buddhism.
Mm.
And Buddhism, you know, because what goes on with being rageful, like I've been very angry in my life for various reasons, you know. And it's hard to be angry all the time because it just wears you out. It's just a fucking energy drain.
It's a toxic chemical. It's not a good
it's
one.
It's totally a toxic chemical. So when you see injustice in the world, it's enraging, you know. Or if you've been unjustly treated by someone, it's enraging. But you need to counteract it with something spiritual, something, you know, connection to something beautiful, you know, and I've gone toward Buddhism, which is about stillness and emptying my mind of like kind of toxins and just constant thinking. Mm. And it's a hard thing to do.
You meditate?
Man. Yeah. I've been meditating regularly. Yes, I do have a mantra. I do have a mantra.
Okay.
Yeah, I learned how to do transcendental meditation. You don't have to do that. You could just do breathing. Just follow your breathing. There's many ways to meditate. Sit down and just follow your breath.
And think about nothing or think about things?
Just think about your breath. And whenever, just follow your breath. Whenever your mind wanders, you just kind of go, okay, I was thinking, go back to the breath. It wanders back to the breath, back to the breath, and do that for as long.
I can't sleep without the only thing, because there's so many songs and words and things that happen in every day in my head. I have a lot of sleep problems. I have like delayed sleep phase syndrome, which means
delayed what?
Delayed sleep phase syndrome. It's similar to insomnia, but it's worse.
Oh yeah, I have bad insomnia too.
So I've never been able to just lie down and sleep.
Yeah, I know.
Like, some people are like, you know, I'm sharing like a room with someone because I'm staying at their house for a few days.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, all right, I've got to go to sleep, man. Peace. And then they're bam. Because they've decided they're going to sleep.
Unbelievable. I admire those people.
It's nuts. So sometimes I can sleep by just listening to my breathing. Like I say, okay, no songs in my head. Stop coming into my head songs. I'm just going to listen to my breathing, which is really hard to do because I breathe really quietly. So focusing on that, and then sometimes I just fall right asleep. But it's still a problem.
Yeah, me too, man. Me too. That's so why I do meditation.
Your on-stage persona is that of a really angry, tortured soul.
I know.
And it really is. Like, have you heard of Louis Schaeffer?
Who?
Louis Schaeffer.
Yeah, yeah.
He's an American comic out here.
Yeah.
And
he lives out here now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he does a gig around the corner from you in Soho every Tuesday and Wednesday.
Where is it?
It's like a basement of like a bar. It's amazing.
He moved
right?
out here, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
I only knew him a little, and I forget what he kind of does. Does he does real angry?
Yeah, but yeah, it's basically yeah that kind of stuff. And his show is called Louis Schaeffer. Free Until Famous. And then at Edinburgh this year, his show is
Free Until Famous.
This year, Edinburgh. I saw the title of it yesterday, and I nearly burst. Like I nearly
what
died.
Was it called?
His show at Edinburgh this year is called Louis Schaeffer Is Better Than You. And coming from him, right, from his angry kind of,
what does he talk about? I haven't seen
him in so long. I said to him, I think you guys do a similar kind of thing in terms of where it comes from,
right?
Maybe. Right. It's watching him and watching you is a cathartic experience, right?
Really,
in which like I'm watching someone kind of break down on stage, but I feel good about it. Because yeah. I know he's doing it. For
I feel
like
that is my service. Like, does he talk about his relationships?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like an angry, she took the kids, and, you know.
Right, he just got divorced, right?
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, hilarious. You know, my wife, she's Ed Burns' manager. Ed Burns, you know Ed Burns, the famous comedian. Ed Burns, she thought she'd marry me and I'd be like Ed Burns. I'm not Ed Burns. I told her, I'm not Ed Burns. And then he looks on the stage, he's like, there's a black guy there. Let me tell you something about black guys, right? And I'm a black guy, he's pointing at me, and I'm a black guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's about to say some like terrible things, right, about being black, right?
It's so funny.
But you know it's coming from a place of he hates himself so much that he needs to. And then you know he's
well,
being ironic. You know he's being ironic
comment.
As well.
Yeah.
And I said to him after the show, I said, it's really weird that it's an American who gets irony.
Yeah.
I know in England, like, when I go on stage and I do comedy, I'm like, I like making the audience uncomfortable. I don't know if you like it, but you do make the audience uncomfortable.
Well, I want the audience to know that...
For a second.
I want the audience to know that I feel like I'm the one who's really the most flawed person in the room.
In the room, yeah.
So after I make them know that, because they can tell I'm, you know, fucked up or whatever,
yeah.
Then I can fuck with them.
Yeah.
Because they know that I'm the real fucked up one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're in on the joke, hopefully.
Yeah, so because at first you said, all right, guys, I'm the worst of you. Now I can take the piss out of you, right?
The what?
I'm the worst in this room. Now I can go in.
Yeah,
because,
as long as, you know,
you're not as bad as me.
As long as a comic really makes fun of himself, then they can kind of fucking do it, you know, other shit. As long as people know that, because you don't want to be up there, like, seen as an arrogant guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that's been my problem when I do shows sometimes, right, is that, because my first thing when I go on stage is to chastise, I just chastise people for being privileged and for being white, and I, my first thing really is to call the whole audience racists and then explain it in, like, a pseudo-smart kind of way.
Yeah.
But it is ironic, right? But it's also a little bit of it is true.
Yeah.
And I think I kind of took those things from someone like Patrice O'Neill.
Someone what?
Patrice O'Neill. Like, you know, the way he makes the audience feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I never really saw a lot of Patrice. I should go back. I can't believe he died, but I should go back and listen. Do you like him? Are you a fan?
Yeah, I think he's a really an ingenious analyst of the human mind.
Really?
And of human nature, I think he's amazing at doing that.
Is there a particular album I should listen to, or you just YouTube him and watch a lot of his stuff?
Yeah, Elephant in the Room is special.
Elephant in the Room.
Most of it is when he was on like Opie and Anthony's show, right?
Yeah.
And there's probably like, he's been on the show so many times, I've listened to maybe 600 hours of him talk about stuff, right? That was in the news at the time. And I'm listening to like radio shows from 2005 where he's talking about stuff. And it's the way he breaks stuff out, I'm like, how did he even think of that angle on the story? And it's not stand-up, but it's just him as a guest on that radio show talking about stuff, right? And even, like, he starts off his Elephant in the Room bit by going, there's a black man there, a beautiful white lady. Well done, black man, you know?
Yeah.
And then he goes, you know how I think about how pretty a white lady is? I look at her and think, how long will they look for her if she goes missing? And then he goes, it's true, right? And then he starts doing a bit about, you know, Natalie Holloway. And it's like, you know, you still remember her name, right? But the same person that killed Natalie Holloway, he just killed a Peruvian chick. What was her name? No one knew. And he went, exactly. Right? And it's like, that's a genius way of thinking something. And to be honest, with comedy, I think my favorite comedians are not the most funny ones. You know, I don't like observational, like, airplane toilets are small people, right? Yeah. But I think, Louis C.K. comes up with bits that are just genius ways of looking at something.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have, a lot of your show is just stuff that, not even how could we think of that, but it's, I'm trying to think about how genius that is, right? And my other favorites are like Stuart Lee. I'm kind of
me too.
I'm obsessed
just saw
with him right now, right? I've got his book on me.
Is it How I Avoided My Certain Fate?
Yeah, have you got it?
Everybody's telling me to read it. No, I gotta buy it.
You've got his.
I just saw him at the Soho because he came and saw me and I was like thrilled, you know.
I saw him about 2 weeks ago. It was amazing.
You did?
Where did you see him? He done a benefit. And he performed, and Mark Thomas performed. Mark Thomas is also more of an activist, and he does comedy from that kind of perspective.
Stuart is so smart, man.
Listen,
and
it's great. He's written out, I don't think he's written out, someone at the publisher has annotated his show, and he has written his show, and he annotates it, right? So there's a star there, and at the bottom he explains why he came up with the joke, what the background of it is, and it's amazing, but he's a genius. Right, and another in the UK, Daniel. Have you heard of Daniel Kitson? Has anyone mentioned him?
Of course, yeah. I haven't seen Daniel perform, but he's revered by people.
If you don't see him live, you're never gonna.
I know, but it's so hard to get a fucking ticket for him.
Yeah, to get tickets, they sell out in 10 minutes.
That's
right?
What I hear. Yeah,
and on top of that,
Have you seen him live?
No, but I play football with him sometimes.
Yeah, I met him in Oslo. I did a show in Oslo that he was. He was doing an earlier slot, and I missed his damn show.
But because he doesn't release anything, my friend always records his sets when he goes. He secretly records it.
Ooh, he wouldn't like that.
No, because I think Daniel wants. I think John Oliver said this on Mark Maron's show. He said Daniel wants there to be no evidence he was ever a performer. If he dies, there's no videotape, there's no recording. So my friend gives me them, and I'm like, this guy is a genius, right? He's the way he comes out with words and stories, it's beautiful.
Really?
Because most of the stuff he does is storyteller shows.
Oh, it's storytelling?
Yeah, he does storytelling for 4 years, and he does one stand-up show, an actual stand-up set. But most of it is a one-man theatre show about a story or characters and stuff. And it's poignant and beautiful and painful and
funny?
Yeah. But
wow, it sounds like he really... He goes deeper than the average stand-up.
That's the draw with him, and you know he has a really intelligent audience. And the reason why he does this, by the way, is because he doesn't want fans. He doesn't want his fans, the real fans. He doesn't do Edinburgh shows on the weekends. He doesn't want random people to turn up and ruin it for his real fans. And the Stuart Lee story of one time that he was apparently Daniel Kitson was in the toilet at the Soho Theatre, and just after one of his gigs. And he heard two of his audience members, they were in the urinals, doing a piss, and they were talking. He didn't like what they were talking about, so he was like, I've got to become less famous. I don't want these pricks turning up.
Oh, really?
So I'm not doing the Soho anymore. I'm going to do, a downstairs in a pub with 4 seats.
That right?
Yeah, and he has, a mailing list of, 20,000 names, and he hates there's 20,000 people on it. He's like, because whenever a comedian gets any sort of fame, Stuart Lee mentioned me. I've got 20,000 people in my mailing list now. It's too many people. You know, I hate that. whenever a comedian gets any sort of fame, he always name checks the D-Dog.
He always what?
They always name check the D-Dog.
What's that mean?
Like, they always, like, mention him as one of their favourite comedians, right?
Oh.
You're like, shut your fucking mouth, Stuart Lee. Like, because him mentioning him as one of his favourites is leading to him getting more fans. He doesn't want any fans, I guess. But he lives really well. Like, when he's on stage and he tells jokes, he's like, you know, I'm minted. I've got a lot of money. I get.
Is that right?
Yeah, because imagine what he does. I mean, he tours for maybe like 3 months a year,
and makes a lot of money.
He gets like a 70% split on the door, and yeah, 20,000 people on the main list, and his tickets go out in 10 minutes, and he's not even, and he lets the show sell out. He doesn't add more. So he's, even though he's making a lot, he can make more. He doesn't want to.
Like,
he
sounds like he's brilliant.
He's really comfortable.
Like, it sounds like the what he's doing is so brilliant. He's making money.
And he actually is pretty good at football as well.
He is?
Yeah, yeah. I play with like him and a couple other comedians and stuff, some of which are famous and some of which I haven't asked yet, but they probably are like the writers on like really famous shows. So like Andy Zaltzman plays as well. Have you heard of him?
No.
He's, you know, John Oliver from the, he does the Daily Show. Yeah. He's John Oliver's partner.
He's from here. Right?
Yeah. He's John Oliver's like they do a podcast called The Bugle together, which is amazing.
Does Oliver live here now?
No, he does a Daily
Show.
He
still is doing a Daily Show. Yeah, he's a funny guy, nice guy too.
Yeah,
I met him.
He's taken over for like 2 weeks.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
Stewart is doing something like filming a movie or some shit.
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, he's shit scared.
Oh, Oliver's scared.
Yeah, John,
he talks about The Bugle's
scared.
Good. Should check that podcast out?
Like, it's amazing satire, and Andy Zaltzman he's one of my favorites as well.
Zaltzman.
And
he's been on the podcast. I love getting exposed to like these things, because you know our worlds can get so small. You know, like I have been trying to, you know, build up my career a little bit, so then I just get like self absorbed, and I love hearing about, you know, these other guys. I wish I could see Kitson live, but you know, like you said, it just sells out.
I've got some recordings. I'll email them to you or something.
Okay,
if you want.
Yeah.
But don't tell kids.
No, definitely.
But yeah, let's might as well talk about yours. So is your father Sicilian?
Yes.
Vale Italiano?
I do not.
No?
You believe that? Yeah. I never was at Sicilian. You know, it was like his, he never even passed the language on it. His parents spoke it.
Yeah.
But my dad didn't.
So he's second generation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'm third.
Yeah.
And I'd love to get to Italy though, and Sicily, and you know, see all that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
but I always used to say my dad has operatic, because the Sicilians love opera.
Yeah.
You know, and I used to say my dad has operatic emotions. Mm. You know, like he would, when he gets upset, it's like you know, what the hell, you turn the thermostat down? What the fuck are you doing? Like he would get upset over the craziest, you know, little things would become big things, and I think that really influenced my comedy because my dad had such kind of crazy big emotions that makes you see the world as absurd, because nothing is in proportion.
Yeah,
everything is blown out of fucking proportion. Yeah. My world is blown out of proportion. Like, I see things as gigantic. I'm overly sensitive because of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I've heard brief mentions of your upbringing. And
my mom was manic depressive.
Yeah.
My mom was bipolar. She was, like, kind of, you know, schizophrenic, would have hallucinations, very depressed. So I grew up in a house that was, you know, not that happy.
Yeah.
You know, because my mom was depressed and mentally ill, and dealing with that was so hard. You know, just, it was, you know, my dad was unhappy, and so, you know, and my mom...
Did your dad know how to deal with it and support, or...
What?
Did your dad know how to, like, kind of deal with your mom's problems and support and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, he tried, you know, but she started going in. She never got, like, better, and he was very frustrated, and, you know, I grew up, like, I grew up very frustrated and angry because of that, you know? Like, I wanted my mother to be normal, and she wasn't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just a kid wanting his mother, blah, blah, blah. So I, you know, so I think that definitely formed me as a comedian who is kind of rageful.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So you're like you're like the stereotypical, you know, comedians must come from pain, which I agree.
Yeah, like, I am a stereotype.
No, but listen, I don't think that these middle-class pretty boys can be that funny. Where is the...
Like, I agree with you.
No, because
they're not that funny,
are
they? I mean, they can be very intelligent and very clever.
Yeah. But there's no, like... a lot of comedians say that's a stereotype. I don't think it's true. And
I think it is true
because,
well, you know
what
though,
you can't have that nice of a life and look that good and that skinny and, you know, have that blonde hair and, you know.
I think that's true. But you know one thing I've been realizing, because I've been, you know, getting interviewed a lot lately because of the success of the movie about me, The Bitter Buddha.
Yeah.
And
well, I was gonna move on to that, by the way, don't worry, we're gonna
But I'm just like I realize, though, I should be less, maybe less harsh on that type of, because you know what I realize about comedy? That there's different things for different people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's different things for different people. Like, some people want shit that isn't deep.
Yeah.
That isn't painful.
Yeah, but
maybe their lives are too full of pain and they want to listen to Michael McIntyre. Or whoever the fuck it is, Dane Cook in the United States, where they just want to hear some guy talk about, you know, my dick flops at the gym.
Yeah.
I mean, who am I to say?
Yeah. Has anyone stolen any of your bits?
Oh, that's a good question.
Dane Cook, sorry.
That's a good question. Well, I feel like a couple of guys, I don't want to mention them, I feel like a couple of guys maybe either subconsciously or consciously took a couple of my bits and I didn't like
lines
it.
Lines or like
actual, concepts,
like concept,
concepts
ideas,
and lines.
Yeah.
But not, it doesn't happen often. And I remember Jerry Seinfeld, I'm not a big fan, but I remember Jerry Seinfeld saying, don't worry about people stealing from you. What you just have to do is make it your own and always be producing new work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But still, if you see someone take something from you, you know, comics usually just police other comics. Like Joe Rogan is great.
Yeah, no,
Joe Rogan calls out people.
comics call
out people. Like, you know, because comics, the good comics know that you don't do that shit.
Yeah.
So it's, you know.
It's the same like me. I grew up in the rap scene. So
someone took
my punchline.
Yeah.
That's mainly, I mean. I mean, Nas has taken quite a few concepts from, like, Pharoah Monch and Organized Confusion and stuff, like, concept songs that are... Because Pharoah Monch and Organized Confusion, they did a song from the perspective of a bullet, and did one from a gun, and then they done one from... Because they were a duo, so they done one from the perspective of babies and a fetus. One who wants to be aborted because he hates the world, right? And he says, the world is painful, it's disgusting, there's this going on, I want to be aborted. And the other one is saying, you know, the world is fantastic, it's life, I want to be born, whatever. And Nas done one later on, from the, like, but it's more of like a family story about him in the womb, watching his mom and his dad argue and stuff.
Yeah.
But if someone stole my punchline and stuff, I'd grab them by the throat and, what? You took my punchline. I think someone recently accidentally took my punchline, like one of the kids I work in the studio with. And I was like, that's not cool. And he's like, is that from you? Oh, I'm really sorry. I thought it was from someone famous. And I was like, okay, yeah, great. So did you start doing comedy in New York?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm from New York.
Around like Catch and...
Catch was on the way out. At that point. And I was never a big club comedian. I was always a guy who did... Like, I'm considered one of the kings of the alternative scene.
Yeah.
Like, I was always a guy who did little rooms and theaters and shit. And part of it was because I was scared to do clubs. They just looked frightening to me. And I needed to be in kind of more intimate settings and... I don't know, and I have a background in acting, and I like theaters and shit, you know what I mean?
Did you train in improv?
Yeah, I did a lot of improv. I started out as a stand-up, and then I found it very scary, like just being up there. I used to throw up before shows, and then so I needed to play with other people, and I got into improv.
Yeah.
And, you know, that served me well, because my mind goes all over the fucking place, you know? And I like to really improv on stage.
Oh, I love that. I love when you accidentally say something.
Yeah.
And then you hypothesize, hey, wouldn't it be crazy if I was that guy who just did this? And then you go into it for a second.
Yeah.
And then you just go back, like, I'm back in the room now. And then there's a little kind of smirk on your face.
Yeah.
This is over. And everyone's like, what did we just see?
That's my favorite part of doing stand-up, is just being able, is feeling the freedom.
Yeah.
To like just fucking play with ideas.
Yeah.
Play with comedy ideas.
So how set are you in your set?
Well,
if you were doing like
it's interesting. Nights. It's interesting because I'm doing a 3-week run. I'm at the end of it. Tonight's my last night at the Soho, and because I'm in a new, I've never done London before. I was a little, I felt like I really had to follow the script.
I was there first night.
So wow.
How has it gone since then? How much?
I've loosened up. I've added stuff. I've added stuff. I'm playing around more. But when I first got here, I was like, oh shit, you know, I haven't done London. I better do this show the way it's, you know, way I do it. You know what I mean? But now that I've loosened up, and in the States, I'm very, like, I get on stage and I don't even go on with the script, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'll just be like, well, you fucking people, you know, like,
if
just...
If this guides me here, then I've got a bit for it, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
We have the check.
And there was one bit I saw of you on YouTube that made water come out of my nose.
What was that one?
That you were being kind of heckled by, not heckled, but some kid was talking, so you decided, okay, let's have a conversation. And then you said to him something like, what's your name? And he took a bit too long. He was like, okay, I don't really believe you. Where are you from? And he made up a place. He was like, Red County. And you were like, you just laughed at him.
Like, I don't remember this.
And then you said something like there's someone in the van with like a microphone saying, oh, yeah, say Red County.
Right. I forgot about that. I don't even remember that.
How did you go there? Like, how did you, I mean, that's obviously
well, you know,
practice.
That's the beautiful thing, though. And I mean, I wonder if you, like, as an artist, right, and you rap, you know, like, you don't even want to know how the fuck that happens.
It's kind
of being in touch. For me, like, you know, the comedy muse, you know, that kind of, like, you know, divine. Can I give you the part?
Yeah.
That kind of divine inspiration.
Yeah.
You know, it just happens, you know. It just happens. And I don't even want to know where it comes from.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But so anyway, it's just something, and I think it's like a muscle you develop. If you've been a comedian, you know, a rapper, it gets in your blood. So a thought like that is just in the air, man.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about comedy. Thank you. That's what I like about comedy.
Yeah.
Is that it feels so good to create. It feels so good to create.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's what it's about. Like,
do you prefer being on stage or writing a bit or coming up with a bit?
I prefer being on stage and writing and coming up with stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
As opposed to, you know, I'm bad as far as being a disciplined person.
You're bad?
My discipline. My discipline is bad as a writer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Have you ever written scripts or anything?
I'm starting to now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I should have been writing them, you know, earlier, but, you know, I'm a late bloomer.
Have you seen Jerry Seinfeld's Comedian? The film, the documentary.
Oh, yes, I did. I loved it.
And that kid with, like, you know...
Orny Adams, yeah. I've met Orny, yeah.
And it's just like...
Yeah, man.
Just got, oh, this is my script about this movie and this script. And I don't want to be like that. I've got one script that I'm working on. And
yeah.
Yeah. It's the one... Until that gets made, I'm not writing another one. I'm not going to be one of these people that have, like, oh, this is all the failed things I've done.
Yeah,
I can't
deal
with failure like that. I can't. That will kill me inside.
Well, you know, L.A., where I live, it's just the land, it's the home of TV and film, and so people are writing scripts all the time, you know. I do want to write more, but my thing is I like to do what I like to do.
Yeah, no, of course.
You know what I mean? So I like to perform, and it's hard for me to sit down and go, okay, I'm going to bang out this show, you know, this concept for a show. But Awadi, I got to go in a little bit.
Oh, yeah,
can
cool,
we
yeah.
wrap up
yeah,
about
yeah.
5, 10
yeah,
minutes?
Yeah, cool. So... Are you like the kind of the father of certain comics, like in terms of their style or what?
Well,
where they came
you
up
know,
with,
lately
people on, okay,
I would
so
never assume
movie,
to be, yeah.
Like the Bit of Buddha.
Yeah.
It's not out here, by the way. How do we get it here?
No, it is now.
Is it?
It
I'm
is now.
I find it on iTunes. Is it on iTunes here?
Yeah, it's now on iTunes.
Okay, great, cool.
Yeah, they
right.
released it like last week or
okay,
something
brilliant.
Like that.
Cool.
But it is available now, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So UK people, check it out, The Bitter Buddha.
And it's about you? Just
yeah, man. Oh, you haven't seen it?
No.
Oh, fuck.
No.
Yeah, man. Well, you'll see. You'll see. It's all about me. It's like the director, really great guy, Stephen Fine Arts, followed me around.
Is that his real name?
I know you believe Fine it. Arts. Dude, do you believe it? I was like, what's your real name? And yes. It is, so.
Okay.
But I had a good feeling about him. He approached me, and he said, I want you to become more well-known.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, why not? And he followed me for, like, close to a year. A lot of stand-up, and it deals with my crazy relationship with my dad.
Okay.
It culminates in a big show.
Yeah.
It talks about how I'm kind of just finding my stride now, later in life. You know what I mean? All that kind of stuff.
Okay.
It's good. You would like it, and I'm happy with it now.
And it looks beautifully filmed, by the way.
Yeah, he did a great job. And really I would, you know, it's a weird thing to watch a movie about yourself. That's weird, man.
Yeah.
At first, I was like, I don't like that. You know, I wasn't into it. But now that it's out, I think he did a really good job, and I think it's a good movie, and I'm proud of it, and
yeah.
I'm really happy.
And before that, were you already doing like quick spots on like Conan as like
yeah.
As a heckler?
Yeah, I've been doing Conan for years. Yeah. That's and been great. Yeah.
Is an Adult Swim thing coming in? What is that?
Yeah,
I'm on a
regular show. I'm a regular on a show now called Your Pretty Face in Hell.
Okay.
It's on Adult Swim.
Yeah.
And it's about hell, and I played typecasting. I played a tortured soul, and they whipped this tortured soul.
Wow.
And pretty
okay.
funny.
Yeah.
Pretty funny, yeah.
All right, cool. So
yeah,
we'll
thanks,
wrap up.
Man.
Yeah, thank you, Eddie Pepperton.
Thank you, Owate.
Thanks, man. Peace.
Yeah.
Yo, I'm not feeling nice. I'm not feeling right. I'm not feeling like I wanna go out tonight. I'm feeling like I wanna punch you all in the face. I'm feeling like I wanna punch a wall in the place. And these are my emotions. Temper so hot, it's borderline molten. I've got too many problems, and this is the worst day to know them. It's my birthday. Here's my birthday. Give me this, give me presents, give me happiness. Give me presents, give me gifts, give me happiness. Yo, I'm not feeling nice, I'm not feeling right. I'm not feeling like I wanna go out tonight. I'm feeling like I wanna punch you all in the face. I'm feeling like I wanna